Welcome back to another episode of the Tourism Geographies podcast, brought to you by the journal Tourism Geographies. We hope that you've been keeping well since the last episode and looking forward to learning more about the cutting-edge research in tourism and geographies published in the journal Tourism Geographies. Now, let's get into this week's episode. In welcoming you back to today's podcast, I'm very pleased that our guest today is Ana Monero from the Australian National University here in Australia. And we will be talking about her recent paper that was published in Tourism Geographies in September this year, 2023. And the article was titled Valuing Surfing Ecosystems, an Environmental Economics and Natural Resources Management Perspective, co-authored with Leon Mack at the School for Field Studies, Center for Tropical Island Biodiversity Studies in Bocas del Toro in Panama. So with that, I say welcome to you, Ana.
Oh, thanks, Joseph. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Thank you, Ana, for making the time today. I'm very excited to be bringing this podcast to our listeners because the framework that you bring to your work, I think, adds considerable new knowledge to the way people evaluate and think about nature-based tourism. But before we get to the depths of your paper, in introducing yourself, tell us a little bit about yourself and your research.
I'm a research fellow at the Crawford School of Public Policy, and most of my work is around environmental management and environmental economics. And I just recently, in the last 2 or 3 years, started taking a focus on surf management. And, you know, when people think about economics, they often think as economics of a science of money. I don't see it that way. I think really economics is about the relations that people have with things that are scarce and they are valuable. So of course money is scarce and valuable, but also our time, labor, our health, but also natural resources and the environment. So this framing of understanding how people access and relate to things that are valuable to us is what I wanted to bring to the study of surfing breaks and surfing ecosystems more broadly as a valuable natural resource.
Excellent.
And how it all came to bear is, was it already a few years ago? I finished my PhD and my husband and I left the kids with the grandparents and we took a trip to Portugal and I still had all these like economics things in my head. I was just trying to clear my mind and just had a great surf in Portugal. We went to get a bite at one of the local eateries. And, you know, I saw this writing on the wall that said, money doesn't bring happiness. Happiness comes in waves. Yeah, I just thought, being a newly graduated environmental economist, like, well, your money doesn't bring happiness, but people use the money to come surfing so they can catch waves and be happy. Like, there is definitely a connection here. So then I thought, surely someone must have, you know, studied the economics of surfing. So when I came back to Australia, I started doing some literature reviews and talking to people, and it seemed that there was quite a big knowledge gap in this space. So that's what I've been dedicating a part of my research to in the last 2 or 3 years, to try to really bring those fundamental concepts in economics and environmental management to a new area of research.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. I think when it comes to the approach that you've taken, this is why we were delighted to publish your paper, because you bring a refreshing approach to the way those who are involved in tourism geographies research value nature. Certainly money doesn't buy happiness, but I saw a similar phrase somewhere and it says money doesn't buy happiness, but it can help. So anyway, to your paper, as I said earlier, your paper, Valuing Surfing Ecosystems, an Environmental Economics and Natural Resources Management Perspective, is available in Tourism Geographies, open access. So after this podcast, to the listeners, please go ahead and download the paper. I think you will find it very useful to your thinking around tourism. So, Ana, the next question I have for you is, in regards to this paper, can you describe the key questions that you sought to address?
So the key questions that myself and my colleague, Dr. Leon Mack, were trying to address is how do you understand the value of surfing ecosystems and how do you measure the value? And the genesis of this research idea came from the fact that a lot of the discourse in the scholarly literature, but also in policy and community, we found was so far it's quite polarized. So there's definitely areas in the world where surfing is indeed causing terrible impacts in the local communities. It can be a form of environmental degradation. It can erode the social cultural values. But in other areas, like where I live in Australia, those waves and those spaces where people go to recreate, they are under threat from external pressures. So there is a need to recognize the intrinsic value to protect those environmental features from the pressure. So it's a bit, it's like two sides of the same coin. And as I said, there's a tension in both sides of the spectrum, but Leon and I thought there hadn't been really an analysis or a paper that brought those two perspectives together and really explain why they're not two different things. They're actually two sides of the same coin, and to deliver positive outcomes for communities, for surfers, of course, but also for the environment, we need to account for those interactions in a holistic way.
And I think this paper very much has implications for other type of recreational activities beyond surf tourism that rely very much on what some environmental economists refer to as the free gifts of nature, which brings me to your the next question about what an environmental economics framework is. Can you describe what you mean by an environmental economics framework?
So there's three words: environmental economics and framework. Let me start with the last one. So what a framework is a system, is a way to organize your ideas, and it could be a framework for analysis. So that provides a set of tools that you can use to understand and to analyze data or, you know, other questions. It also can be a conceptual framework. So it's a way to organize your ideas, to understand where things fit. So then talk about economics. Economics, again, is the discipline that looks at the value of things and how people perceive that value. And when we say environmental, that means those values that are embedded in the natural environment. So in brief, what we meant by environmental economics framework is a set of ideas that together can be used to better understand the value that's associated with the surfing ecosystems, and a set of guiding principles to quantify the worth or the magnitude of those values. So then this information can be used to inform management policies.
Okay, thank you, Anna, for that. Okay, so this now brings us to what lies at the heart of your paper. Can you please describe what surf ecosystems are?
Yeah, thanks, Joseph. That's a great question. And there is quite a bit of debate in this among scholars and policymakers and community what an ecosystem is. Should we call this surf breaks, surfing resources, or just waves? So what we did in this paper, we used the term surf ecosystems because the notion of ecosystems implies those relations between components of the system. So typically, it's very easy for people to understand what a wave is and what, you know, underlying that wave is a surf break. So a surf break is the discrete location where a wave forms and a wave that can be ridden. But there's so many elements that can literally make or break that wave. And this is perhaps something that people who don't surf don't understand. They look at the waves. Even on a windy day, I get like my friends, they're like, oh, it's windy, are you not going surfing? Like, no, you don't surf when it's wind. The wind messes the waves. If it's windy, you take out your kite or your windsurf. They're like, oh, but there's waves. They're like, yeah, but those waves are wind swell. Really, the way waves break is a result of a very finite and delicate set of processes. And if any of those processes is altered, the wave can stop functioning. So this is why the concept of ecosystem comes into play. So it's not only the physical elements, whether it's the sand or the reef, but it's the interaction between those elements. So it incorporates the notion of how, you know, the currents, how the sand banks move, the sand sediment, and also the humans and non-human elements of those ecosystems. So you'll have mangroves that stop the coastal erosion, you'll have people polluting those environments. So you'll have people looking after those environments. So the concept of surfing ecosystem really comprises the surf breaks as the discrete location where waves form and everything else that's within those spaces and all the interactions between those components.
It's a reminder, Anna, of the way some researchers talk about tourism, the tourism system, right? Each, there are many components that make it up, and to keep the equilibrium, there's a kind of necessity for each of those elements to be in sync with the others, which brings us to what I think is one of the key contributions of this paper, the novel framework you propose of the six features. For those listeners who may not be familiar with the paper, if you download the paper, you will see an infographic that Anna and Leon have included in this paper, which captures some of the key features of this novel framework. I wonder, Anna, if you could just run us through the framework that you and Leon propose.
Yeah, of course. And this the framework is very much based on the question that we just described on the differences between surf breaks and ecosystems. And this is where I find it really enriching and actually quite fun to bring in my environmental economics hat and thinking of the work that I've done in water resources. So when we look at water resources, you can think of water as, you know, the water that you drink, the water comes out of your tap. This could be equivalent to a surf break or a wave. And then you think of water resources as a river, a lake, an aquifer. But then you also have water ecosystems and you also have ocean ecosystems. So I don't think any of these terms exclude each other. I see them more as a set of the Russian dolls that one element is encapsulated within the other. And it depends on the scale that you're looking at the issues, and it depends on what the scope of your research or your community engagement or your policies, you may decide to look at one or the other. So the framework started with the most essential component is that at a minimum, to go surfing, you need a wave. And these waves break over certain features, either it's a shallow sandbank or reef or around a headland, and this is what we call the surf break. Beyond the surf break, there's elements that that contribute to the wave formation. So we have what has been defined in by Dr. Ed Atkin from New Zealand, Aotearoa, as a swell corridor. So that's the area of the ocean that's ocean bound where the waves come. So the swells form many, many, many kilometers out at sea. And then it's those trains of waves that travel from the deep water to the shallow water. Anything that's built of, you know, can impact the travel of those waves. So that is part of the surfing resources. But the notion of resource, it implies somehow the use or the benefit for humans. So we tend to use the word resources when you benefit from something. It's like water resources. Oh, I'm going to use that water to build a dam and use that for hydropower. Or I'm going to put that water to irrigate my crop. So I think that there's somehow a limitation in the referring to these spaces as surfing resources, because it automatically triggers that idea in your brain that, oh, we're going to make money out of it. We're going to use it. We're going to exploit it. So it's not necessarily something that you extract benefit from. Yes. And this is where the concept of ecosystems comes in. And ecosystems is, as we said before, is the notion of like interactions between those systems. And associated with those ecosystems, there's different services. And this comes from a very well-established framework, environmental economics, which says that ecosystems can provide essentially four types of ecosystem services. They could be cultural, could be provisioning, regulating, and supporting, depending on whether you're looking at the ecosystem from a perspective of just the pure enjoyment of those waves. That's what we would call a recreational or a cultural ecosystem service. Mm-hmm. But surfing ecosystems, and again, this is not only the wave, this includes the coast and all the systems that within, they could also harbor important habitat. It could be nesting habitats for endangered species. So that could fall on the optic of a provisioning or supporting ecosystem services. So it's more complex than just people sticking a surfboard under their arms and just paddling out to have fun. These systems are much more complex. And then the point of this notion of overlap with other values is that by really looking after those waves, we are doing more than just contributing to the enjoyment of a few privileged people who have enough time and resources to enjoy themselves in the water. It's much more than that. By looking after those surf breaks and all the processes that support that equilibrium, we can also protect biodiversity, like sustainable livelihoods, and many other desirable outcomes that are underpinned by those surfing spaces. Mm-hmm. So this is looking from like a environmental geographic optics. So now we're looking at what we see. We have a surf break, we have surfing resources and the surfing ecosystem. Now we're looking at the second part of the framework, and this is the economics. So the first question that we wanted to think about when we looking at the economics framework is what is the value? And what is the value of a wave? Like, it's like, well, what is the value of a wave? That's almost like a philosophical question. And there's different frameworks that you can apply to try to understand what values. And I think there's a critical question when we're doing impact assessments, when people say like, oh, there's so many people that come here and spend this much money, traveling and to this space, and they contribute this much to the local economy. Yeah, that's a great measure of the financial impact that the tourism has, but it's not the end of the story. So we could also look at what we call non-market values. So non-market values are the values that people assign to elements, yes, in this case, the environment, that cannot be bought or sold in the market. So you cannot go in and buy a wave, and that wave brings you, it contributes to your well-being, your mental health, but all those things are so-called, quote-unquote, intangible. So how do you measure the worth or the value that people assign to something that cannot be bought or sold? Mm-hmm. So there's tools in environmental economics that have been developed for the last 30, 40 years, and they're very, very, very well established. And this is what we call an economic valuation, and in particular, non-market valuation. So this is a set of techniques that we have where we can run surveys and ask people, oh, would you be willing to pay this much to contribute to this particular environmental outcome? Or would you be willing to trade this or that? So by understanding how people assign priorities to the environment, how much would they like or dislike certain impacts, you can assess what is the intangible worth that people assign to that particular environmental feature. And then underpinning all of this is the last point of our framework, that is, it's not only about quantifying the worth or how much income that particular surf break generates. It's not only about the net number, it's really also about understanding who wins and who loses. So we have the last point of our framework is at the tip of that inverted triangle. It sits at the hinge of the whole framework. It's a concept of equity and sustainability. So when we look at what is valuable, why the surf breaks are valuable, and how much are they generating in terms of both market and non-market values, we want to really remind users, community, policymakers that that's not the end of the story. We also need to understand who are the communities, both human and non-human, who are benefiting from the use of these resources, who are the ones who are not. And we always need to remind ourselves that any environmental management policies or legislation has to have that consideration for equity and long-term sustainability. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Anna. And I think what the many points you raise aren't really only scholarly concerns. They're also concerns for practitioners and for any practitioners listening. I think when you download the paper and work through it, you will realize that many of the concepts discussed are not just in line with theoretical discussions, but also have very much practical implications. And I note in your paper, to reinforce what you've just said, you and Leon say it is fundamental that the benefits and costs associated with surfing ecosystems be considered in a holistic manner, taking into account multiple forms of value and carefully reflecting on equity implications for humans and the environment. And the non-market and market valuations that you talk about are particularly important. One of your main conclusions was, you say, to this aim, the surfing ecosystems valuation framework can assist tourism scholars, and I would add practitioners, by providing a systematic approach for assessing the impacts of surf visitation over time and across regions. And the usefulness of the framework can be applied to set strategic goals regarding sustainability and development of surf-rich destinations, defining policies and regulations, and the vast array of complex and interconnected values derived from surfing ecosystems. So with that said, Anna, one of the things I want, final questions I want to ask you then is, and this is something that there is much debate about, how would you describe sustainable nature-based tourism from an environmental economics point of view?
So from an environmental economics perspective, there's a concept that is quite important, and that is the notion of the carrying capacity of the environment. So the carrying capacity means how much the environment can carry, you know, right, how much is sustainable before we trespass a point of no return, a threshold beyond which the damage is permanent. Mm-hmm. So we, and you can think of the environmental carrying capacity, for example, how many people can come to this area before the waste that is generated just becomes too much and that pollution becomes permanent. And from a surfing perspective, you can also think of the recreational carrying capacity of that wave. How many people can you have in that particular spot before you enter a problem of overcrowding, which obviously becomes very stressful for those participants, which also you know, entails questions of localism, where there's a sense of entitlement for the people who are caring for that space, and they see that there's that access or that value eroded by visitors. And is that something that should or should not be managed? I don't know. I don't have an answer for that. Mm-hmm. So from an economics perspective, what I see as a sustainable nature-based tourism is a form of visitation that is respectful of the environment, that is respectful of local traditions, and it is within that threshold that will ensure that we have positive outcomes for local communities, especially in areas where, you know, they're rapidly growing and tourism provides you know, an important source of livelihood and also avenues for local community to diversify their skills, becoming more entrepreneurs, learning foreign languages, and opening up avenues for development, but within that threshold that respects the limits of the environment.
That's all very interesting, and it makes me think of an article I read recently that question the inclusiveness of a recreational pursuit like surf tourism. And this is a question without notice, just drawing from your discussion just then. To what extent is surf tourism inclusive in your view?
Inclusive, or like, do you mean like the participants or the local communities?
In terms of the interactions between host or surfer and resident. Because one of the things we see here in Australia, as you're aware of, is the contest for space. And in particular, it becomes quite tense in areas where there's rapid property development, where there's rapid tourism growth, where there's a contest for the waves, if you like. So when I ask about the inclusivity of surf tourism, it makes me think about how, you know, how inclusive is it as a pursuit?
I think it's that really is a question that can only be answered at the local level. The richness and the diversity of peoples who engage in this pursuit and the location is so different. Mm-hmm. So there could be locations where it is very inclusive and others where it's not. But it is, I think it is somehow paradoxical in some areas where, you know, local community, they can be engaged in tourism activities. You can be a restaurant owner or a tour operator, but also a surfer yourself. Yes. So I can imagine that could be difficult as for an individual, but also from a management perspective for the local council or the local tourism agency. So on the one hand, you want to preserve those natural values. You want to preserve amenity for your local residents.
Yes.
But at the same time, you know, there's an opportunity for economic growth. So that those trade-offs, those balances, they're delicate. And that's why in the framework we have the point of equity and sustainability, because we always need to think of who are the winners and who are the losers. Right. But I think there's also this duality of being a local or being a surfer is dissipating. I see more and more individuals wearing both hats and having like a blended persona where you know when you're in your water, you're a surfer, that's all you want to do. But then when you're on land, you still have to feed your family and run a business. So how can you marry both? And I'll give you a fun example. I've traveled with my family to Simalua, which is a small island and then off the coast of northern Sumatra.
Yes.
And the waves were okay. It was not big, but there was a bigger forecast for the coming days. And I chatted to one of the local entrepreneurs who was a local young man who was, he did a few things, but among others, he was probably the only person in that particular spot that was repairing boards. And my husband took a couple of his boards. He always dinks his board. They always end up on the reef. That's another story. Anyway, so I was chatting to this young man. I said, oh, you know, there's a big swell coming in the next days. You know, you'll be super busy with all those broken boards. And he looked at me like in disbelief, saying, I'm not going to be working. I'm going to be surfing.
Yes.
Like, oh.
Yes.
Yeah. And I just felt like, reality check. He's like, of course. Yes. At heart, he's a surfer. You know, yes. If the waves are good, yes, he's going to be surfing and he'll repair boards, you know, at a time. So this whole notion that, oh, we have like tourists coming, spend their money, and the local people, you know, the locals are there just to work. There's a lot of places where that's evolving, and then people are really embracing surfing as both an avenue for the tourism-based livelihoods, but also as a, as a cultural and as a spiritual pursuit that is much more than just the money-making for the local community. It is much more than that. You see that in places like Indonesia, where the youth are really taking the sport as part of their identity. They form bonds within the community, just the same as that we do in other places. And you have some incredible athletes coming out of those communities as well. So it is. I find surfing is really transformative in this regards.
Mm-hmm. And many of what you just talked about is surfing is serious leisure, which some colleagues are looking into as we speak. And the as we get towards the end of this podcast, and I wanted to just ask you another question. You know, there's this sense that surfers in general, because of the activity that they partake in, are natural environmentalists. What would you say to that?
Well, I'll quote the work that Leon Mack published before we worked together, and they run a survey where they asked people about the environmental attitudes, and at least in the survey, most of the surfers said yes, they not only have a positive attitude towards the environment, but they'd be willing to pay another extra $5 or $10 or whatever that fee was towards programs that would support the environment. So I think at heart, and we have the best intentions, and at the end of the day, we rely on that sustainability of the ocean. We want the waves to function. We want the water to be clear. We want to see wildlife while we're surfing. It is also true to say that it is an extremely polluting sport in terms of your carbon footprint when you travel. The four-wheel drive cars that we all drive when we go on the beach, and that's, yes, the wetsuits that we buy, the surfboards that we ride, all of those are made of materials that are tremendously polluting. And they're not easily recyclable. So I think there is a bit of a dichotomy. And yeah, I think, you know, I'm speaking now not as a researcher, but as a surfer. And I think, yes, I care for the environment. I see myself as someone who wants, you know, to protect that environment. At the same time, in order to engage in that sport, you need those elements. You need to travel, you need a wetsuit, you need a board. So we are having an impact on the environment that we are not, I think, doing a good job at preventing or mitigating. But there are some positive stories out there. There's companies who are now looking at more sustainable materials to build those boards and wetsuits. There's companies that are looking at how you could recycle those materials. And again, looking at, you know, nature-based tourism more broadly, it's not unique to surfing. You also use wetsuits to go scuba diving. People have mountain bikes. Running shoes, everything that we do to interact with the environment, camping gear, everything. So everything that we do has an impact. So I think, yes, we are an environmentally minded community, but we're also responsible for an impact. And I think there's a lot of scope for industry, for communities, for surfers to try to harmonize those two sides.
Nicely said, Anna. Now, for those listening, just a reminder, the paper that we're drawing from here was recently published in Tourism Geographies and co-authored with Anna and her colleague, Leon Mack. The paper was titled Valuing Surf Ecosystems and Environmental Economics and Natural Resources Management Perspective. Before we finish up, Anna, just briefly, can you flag what's to come in the work that you're doing that leads off of this published work?
I think what an application of this framework is really a roadmap for scholars or policymakers who want to understand and measure those values. So by bringing everything in one spot, it becomes like a one-stop shop for understanding the value. So if you're going to do a study where you want to see how much people spend through tourism that in surf rich areas, that's perfectly fine, but that can be seen as one piece of the puzzle. So now you can say, oh, I'm doing this research, but it fits with something else, and there's other things that I'm not looking at, and vice versa. You can try to understand, oh, what's the impact of this, you know, change that is happening, and try to look at the negatives of that, but that also sits within a broader picture of other positives that could be happening. So the way that I see this paper contributing is as a guiding tool for people who may not be familiar with economics and environmental managed frameworks to see how all the different pieces fit together. There's no right or wrong, but we need to acknowledge that everything that we do fits within a broader space, and we need to understand what is it that we're trying to do and how it fits with the rest.
Excellent. Thank you, Anna. On that note, that's a perfect note to finish up. That's an invitation for listeners to download the paper. And taking Anna's comments into consideration, it will make the paper a lot more familiar to you from here. So with that said, thank you, Anna, for joining us today on the Tourism Geographies podcast. We do appreciate the contributions you've made to the journal, and we look forward to seeing more work from you.
All right. Thanks, Joseph. Yeah, that was a great. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Thank you. And to listeners, thank you again for being with us today. We look forward to you joining us on the next episode of the Tourism Geographies podcast. From me here in Sydney, bye for now. Thank you for joining us on today's episode of the Tourism Geographies podcast. We look forward to bringing you more next week. Please join us then.